Hi everyone, Stephen Fletcher here, welcoming you back to episode 33 of the EvoFi podcast, a finance podcast for humans. In case you missed it, we posted a blog a couple weeks back on mistakes your financial advisor can prevent, in which we skimmed the surface on some problem areas. If you've not had a chance to get to that blog, we have you covered. Over the next couple of podcasts, we're going to take the opportunity to dive in a little deeper into these problem areas. Today, we're going to discuss investments and why things like an investment policy statement can be so important. A quick reminder before we jump in, this podcast is 100% free of any tax, legal, or investment advice. Our goal here is education and a little fun. If you need advice in any of the areas mentioned, tailored to your specific circumstances, feel free to give us a call and we'll see how we can help. Lastly, don't forget to subscribe if you haven't already. Check us out on Twitter and Instagram at EvoFi Podcast or drop the podcast a line at evofipodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. And all right, investments. Here we go with me and Jack O'Brien, our SEMA. So Jack, here we are in our series on mistakes that your financial planner can help you avoid. And this is our investments edition. So we're just going to jump straight in here and we're going to break down a few different mistakes that you can make when not working with a planner. And then when working with the right planner, how you can avoid these mistakes. So we'll just go ahead and get started here. The first one we're going to talk about is a mistake to avoid: the wrong holdings. What do we mean by that? Well, number one, we're talking about holdings that don't have the right level of liquidity. That means you can't buy or sell them very quickly. And then also the wrong type. And we'll break down what we mean by that as well. So Jack, here we go. Wrong holdings. What are some of the mistakes that we see? Maybe we have some specific client stories that we can tell, but sometimes that we've seen the wrong holdings in a client situation.
Certainly. One good example would be when you have a time horizon for different client needs and the liquidity that you're having doesn't really match that. Sometimes holding too much cash when you're investing for a long term, you're a little too liquid for your actual long-term goals. And we see this with clients when their risk tolerance is something they're still kind of getting adjusted to and making sure that it actually meets their goals. Another can be when you're a little bit too illiquid. This could be with annuities or private real estate. This is good for some clients, but it doesn't fit every client's needs, especially with private real estate when you might have $250,000 locked up for 5+ years. And you really have to be ready to have that illiquidity, which does come at a liquidity premium when you're giving up some of that liquidity.
Yep. That's a great point about the liquidity can go both ways. With the you're sitting on too much cash for your time horizon. Some examples of that. There was one time that I was speaking with someone and this was years, I mean, almost a decade after 2008, but they'd gotten so scared through the market turmoil of 2008 that they had sold all of their investments. They were sitting just in cash. And then they came and they wanted to plan around, well, how are we going to be successful on the amount of cash that we have left? And it's one of those unfortunate cases of not having gotten with someone at the right point in time so that you can come up with a plan around what to do with all of that cash. Because in order to accomplish everything they wanted to accomplish, they couldn't just be in cash. I mean, this was a period of time when cash was returning less than 1%. And so every single year they were spending significantly from their portfolio without any growth. So they were too liquid and then they kind of paid for that. And then some stories on the other side where we've seen people come to us with annuities and the amount that they can get out each year from that annuity is too little for their needs. And their portfolio size could maybe do with a little bit faster of a drawdown, but they're just not allowed to because so much of it is built into this one investment that just has limitations on how you can access it. So That's wrong holdings. So certainly we see that all the time. And that wrong holdings can also even come down to individual securities.
Certainly.
Those come with a bit more risk than, say, a mutual fund or an ETF, an exchange-traded fund might. We've seen situations where someone works at a very large company and they come to us and a lot of their portfolio is in the stock of that same very large company. Well, what happens if there's a bad story that comes out about that employer? What if you lose your job? Or what if you have a round of layoffs and you're in that round of layoffs? And so the market value of that security is going down. There can be a lot of issues around too much concentration, certainly the liquidity. But then we want to talk about the type of holding as well. By that, I specifically mean, you know, we talked about liquidity with private real estate, but having too much of a concentration of one type of investment can be a problem. But then also another client story, the type can even come down to, do you hold municipal bonds? Do you hold taxable bonds? I know that seems like a really minor piece, but if you're not working with the right professional and someone who understands everything that's going on in your financial life, your taxes, as well as your investments, then you can end up with some holdings that are doing completely the opposite of what you would want them to do. And a good situation of this was, a retired woman who came in and her husband had passed away, so she was on Social Security, and she had a portfolio that was, the portfolio and Social Security were covering her retirement needs. But because of how much money she had, her Social Security wasn't taxed. But when we reviewed her allocation, almost all of her bonds were in municipal bond funds. And municipal bonds, the benefit of them is that the interest is not taxable, but the downside is you have a lower interest rate. So if you're already in a situation where you're not paying any taxes because your deductions are the same or greater than your income, then municipal bond funds aren't adding any value by not being taxable. And in fact, they're only hurting you because the interest rate that you're getting is lower than it would be with a taxable bond. And that's just an example of, yes, today we're talking about investments, but all of the areas of your financial plan are so interrelated.
Yeah.
I mean, we wouldn't recommend another security that we've talked about, private real estate, to someone who that's not the right situation for them from a tax standpoint, from a risk management standpoint, from a cash flow standpoint. I mean, it's all so interrelated.
Yeah. And even one thing to mention that a lot of people don't think of, but that you do see really go into fruition when either tax loss harvesting or having other types of drawdown strategies, or that bid-ask spread that actually occurs on the ETF level. And if you have, you know, a smaller, less-known company giving an ETF that does have pretty good returns but has a really low volume, and we just saw this was one of the fund providers that reached out to us, you're going to have a huge bid-ask spread, which is really the willingness to buy and the willingness to sell kind of disparity, where you're going to get a lower price than you actually should be getting when selling that, when there's just less volume and less buyers there. So just something to be cognizant of when choosing the ETFs that you're allocating money to.
Yep, that's a great point. So the second mistake that we want to talk about is the wrong allocation. And this is one that we talk to really all of our clients about. Because sometimes you'll have someone who comes in and they're younger and they have a great high-paying job. And so they want to take on, you know, maybe a higher level of risk with their portfolio because they have the earnings and they have the time horizon to support it. But maybe they take a risk tolerance questionnaire, which we have every client take, because we want to understand, what's your perception of the financial risks out there? We want to make sure that we're properly matching your expectations of the market with, as best we can, the experience that you'll have in the market, right? So if you're someone that doesn't like to see a lot of volatility, well, then being in an all-stock fund is going to be really difficult for you when you're reviewing your portfolio. So we'll see some people come in and, you know, they're invested 100% in stock because they are, you know, younger and they have a good paying job. And so they say, I have time to recover from this. Well, then they take a risk tolerance questionnaire and we put together a long-term plan, and they're just taking on way too much risk. Well, depending on how you came to that portfolio, you could have come to that portfolio just through that's what you thought you might want, or the stock market's been going up. And so it's really easy to invest in a very aggressive portfolio when everything looks good. But then depending on the relationship that you have maybe with a broker or with another professional, you know, sometimes there are financial professionals that are going to put you in a portfolio or an allocation that is going to grow as quickly as possible so that the amount that they get paid can grow as quickly as possible as well. So this is one that we see in a lot of circumstances.
Yeah, and certainly when that expectation and the returns don't necessarily match that client goals, that can be a, you know, an issue that we definitely see a lot where, you know, you're taking undue risk when you don't necessarily need to. And especially with some of these people with, you know, a high paying technology job, the risk of that high earning job might be one of the reasons you're receiving higher compensation. So making sure that you're able to measure your overall risk, which does include your form of employment, and that compensation could be important when creating that portfolio for you.
Yep, that's a great point. And then the third that we're going to talk about today, there are many more, and we can get into very specific client situations, which we're not going to do on this podcast. But the third mistake that we want to talk about is just that of expectations. And this really comes down to the risk that you are willing to take. And sometimes there's a break between the risk that you're actually comfortable with and then the risk that's built into your portfolio. This is a big one. At Evo, our view is really that we shouldn't take an undue amount of risk. If it's not necessary, why would we take more risk than we need to? We're dealing with people's hard-earned savings, their hard-earned growth, and this is someone's financial future. It's your retirement. It's your financial independence that we're talking about. We take this very seriously, and so if there's a way that we can get there without taking unnecessary risk, certainly we're never going to cut any corners, but if we can do it in a way that's easy to understand, easy to follow, and is as comfortable as possible, that's what we're going to want to do each and every time.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, expectations and that allocation are just so intertwined. You know, when taking a look at certain people's initial allocations when coming in, those risks that they're taking on can be huge. Some people just don't weight their portfolios based on market expectations, based on anything really. And I've seen, you know, people have their 401k in small cap up to 1/3 of the entire portfolio. That's a lot more risk than they need to be taking. And when taking a market-weighted approach as we do, that's so much more than you'd really need to be putting into even a 100% equity portfolio, which as we've talked about before, 100% equity really is not going to be the best decision for the majority of people that we'd be working with or that really are out there in general.
Right. So how do we fix all of these things? Well, first things first. Investments, just like anything else, nothing in your financial life, nothing in your financial plan is one size fits all. We always take the approach that it's the client sitting in front of us, it's the couple sitting in front of us. We're coming up with a plan for them. We're not coming up with a standard that applies to every single one of our clients. And there are some important things that we need to take into account with that. Certainly, risk tolerance is going to be an important piece. If you're someone that's really comfortable taking risk in the stock market, you understand it, it's not something that causes you a lot of concern or stress, then certainly we can maybe have a little bit more of an aggressive portfolio, or we can layer in some private real estate or some ways to try to increase your expected return. But that's always going to come with some costs. It's always going to come with greater risks. And so for the clients that don't want to take those risks, then we have to adjust that portfolio approach to make sure that it's the right fit for them. And another really important piece is, what's your required return? I think this is one that not a lot of people necessarily take into account. There's the return that you want to make. Obviously, everyone wants to make as high of a return as possible. But what's the return that's going to get you to where you want to go? If that return is that you maximize your 401k and you save some in a brokerage account and you just have to make 5% per year in order to achieve all of your goals, well, then why would we put together a portfolio strategy that is going to get you you know, the expected return is 10, 15% if it comes with risks that could mean that you're not able to achieve all of those goals. So again, it's very much a, we don't have a list of investments that we need to sell. We don't have a list of investments that are on the approved buy list. We sit down and it absolutely is portfolio construction with the client first. So it's the client needs, it's the client desire, it's the client plan, and then we're going to build all of those investment building blocks around it.
Yeah, no, certainly.
All right, well, that is the investments portion. So if there's only one thing you take away from this, it is that everything that we do here at Evo and everything that your planner should be doing for you should be based on you, the person, shouldn't be based on the process, shouldn't be based on the package. So that's the investments portion of our mistakes that your financial planner can help you prevent. Please tune in next time as we go through all of the rest of the financial mistakes that we have highlighted in our blog. We'll be breaking them down with some various experts, some various partners of ours that we work with closely as we delve into the other areas of your financial plan where there might be some mistakes that we can help correct.